If something's ephemeral, it doesn't stick around for long. At least that's the intention. Language is ephemeral. Who speaks Aramaic? What about that beautiful sunset? There for a moment, then gone. The word ephemera is often used to describe a piece of writing that's not meant to be preserved. Cheap words, fleeting words. Things like political leaflets or flyers from the Cold War. Printed today, posted tomorrow, forgotten about the day after. I own a ton of ephemera, stuff that means something to me, but perhaps not much to anyone else. You might call it junk. This morning, I collected 9 pieces of ephemera from my desk, just stuff that was right in front of me or just under the desk, and I posted photos of them on Facebook. And I'm not even what you'd call a collector of ephemera. But believe me, there are collectors. They have their own very compelling reasons for doing what they do. And the people that buy and sell this stuff, the dealers of ephemera, they have some fascinating insights about what motivates these collectors. Between them all, the pro collectors, the dealers, the casual collectors like you and me, between all of us, with all of those different interests that we have, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that there's an alternative history of the world out there, outside the history books, outside the internet, and it's still very much thriving today. Here's Alina Simone in New York.
A couple of months ago, a weird flyer appeared all over Lower Manhattan. "Connect with another human being naked over tea," it said. A guy named Koji was looking for a more interesting way to cover rent, and this is what he came up with. So I pried the flyer from a pole and took it home. I've spent half my life saving things most people associate with the recycling bin. Zines, playbills, ticket stubs. And it turns out I'm not alone. The collection of ephemera is on the rise, as are new wave of rare book dealers punking up the definition of what it means to be a literary collectible. Philip Penka is a Berlin-based dealer with a special focus on Eastern European samizdat, illegal self-published material that circulated during the Soviet era.
Often you would only have a night to read it. You know, you'd have to squint really hard to try to make out the text, and then you'd pass it on. So they weren't made to be kept or to put on your shelf or to look pretty.
10 pieces of rice paper stuffed into a typewriter. You'd be lucky if you got a copy made from the top sheet. That's how my dad, who grew up in the Soviet Union, described the samizdat he read. He laughed when I asked him whether he took any with him when he left for the U.S. This was the analog equivalent of Snapchat. You read it, it vanished.
I had a wonderful copy of Mikhail Bulgakov's Master and Margarita that, as it turned out, was actually published on one of the first computers that they had in the Soviet Union. So this was printed from a mainframe computer and then later bound for circulation.
I wish I could play some kind of audio for you here to illustrate how samizdat was made and shared. Instead, you're hearing the musical equivalent, a song by Russian dissident Alexander Galich, recorded in the 60s, that circulated illegally on cassette tape. But today, in the age of the overshare, the distributors of this mysterious medium, whether musical or print, remain anonymous. That's part of what makes collecting it so exciting.
You know, there's a sense now for many people that everything has already been collected. Everything is being digitized. It can be found on Google Books. And people are realizing that this just isn't true. That's, I think, where some of the thrill comes from, that you are able to find these things. And in many cases, sort of document historical phenomena by things that aren't yet recorded, that aren't in libraries.
I was surprised when Philip Penka told me that most of the samizdat he sells goes right back to the former Soviet Union, to native collectors eager to reconstruct the communist era's hidden history. Not all ephemera was published by dissident freedom fighters, though. Mass-produced government propaganda is just as sought after. Alex Aiken became the house expert on Asian ephemera at Balerion Books in San Francisco when he discovered one of the earliest gay travel guides to Taiwan, buried in their storage room. He told me a story about a family yard sale where he tried selling some extra copies of Mao's Little Red Book and was confronted by an elderly Chinese man.
He pointed to his mouth and he said, you know why my teeth are like this? Because Red guards who were waving these books around kicked me in the face until my teeth were gone. And it really drives home the fact that these are things that had consequences in their time. these are not just playthings.
I have to admit, I'm one of those people who finds communist propaganda mysteriously appealing, even beautiful. And a lot of kids decorating their dorm rooms apparently agree. I have a closet full of Stalin-centric Soviet magazines flea marketed during my last trip to Russia. As the daughter of political refugees, I'm not sure what accounts for my attraction to dictator kitsch, but according to Alex, it doesn't make me a Stalinist.
I think one mistake a lot of people make is they assume that someone's collection reflects their own values. But in fact, you often see, for example, the most serious collectors of anti-Semitic propaganda in the U.S., almost all of them are Jewish. The biggest collectors of anti-Chinese materials, say from the 1880s, some of them are Chinese-American lawyers.
The most ephemeral ephemera, however, wasn't published by groups, but handmade by a single individual. To Adam Davis, whose shop, Division Leap in Portland, Oregon, deals in post-World War II ephemera, it's all about democracy.
When you look at a photocopied punk zine or a flyer for a show that somebody made themselves in the middle of the night at Kinko's, it has this aura of a participatory culture. The message of it is that you could do this yourself. Like, you should go out and do this. You should start a zine. You should make a flyer. It's amazing because in a way it's also local too. It reaches people in a geographical and immediate physical way, like a flyer on a pole in a major city is a way of exposing your work to somebody who wouldn't see it otherwise because they would never think to type your name into a search engine.
Okay, but given this stuff is so easy to make, how does a collector who paid Adam $2,500 for the original flyer advertising the first New York performance of John Cage's Silence know he's getting the real deal, not a copy made at Kinko's yesterday? It's not easy. Authenticating ephemera requires getting scientific about stuff like vintage staples and the thickness of Xerox machine ink. But the ephemera of today is more likely to involve JPEGs and text grabbed from tumblers.
Okay, so we've heard laser cut, we've heard pop up.
Yeah.
Should we try to sew the binding?
That's Garnet Hertz, leading a zine-making workshop at NYC Resistor, a hacker collective based in Brooklyn. Hertz has led workshops like this all over the world, often at hackerspaces, from Chile to Canada, with China up next. I just assumed people who spend a lot of time with microcontrollers and blinky tape wouldn't geek out over something so primitive. I was wrong. The collective uses a mashup of high and low technology to document their story. A laser cutter, computers, an etching press, scissors, glue, and Kinko's all play a role in bringing Resistor's zine to life. As a snapshot of Resistor's history, it's probably ephemeral. But as an artifact, it might just be an illuminated manuscript of the 21st century. In any case, I won't be throwing it away. For the world, this is Alina Simone from New York.
You can see a lot of the ephemera that we just heard about. Alina's stuff, the dealers you heard from, their stuff, the guy who wanted a naked conversation, my ephemera from my desk. For all of that, go to pri.org/language or go to the World in Words page on Facebook. We'll have details there about how you can share your own ephemera with us, should you wish to make any of it public. I'll be back in a few days. See you then.